horsevine can be for you. It's dangerous to say that it must be correct, because immediately there is some person who has got some spinal defect who immediately decides there is no hope for him because his spine is not absolutely perfect. The eternal is not that mean. You put your spine as close to normal as it is possible to get it. You sway yourself a little so that you're sitting perfectly evenly. You move your head back and forth so that it is perfectly unheavy. It is settling comfortably on your neck, and then you sit steadily. With regard to breathing, if you cannot concentrate normally, it can be useful to count breaths, inhalation or exhalation, whichever you prefer. Some people say count both. I think that creates too much of a, almost of an opposite in the mind. You need to know that in and out are one movement. But if you are capable of concentrating, there is really no need to do a concentration exercise, in which case you can just sit still without worrying about breathing. If the breathing becomes rough, and it often does if you count breaths, if it is not the normal way of breathing, you can have serious trouble. In the deeper meditations, one almost seems not to breathe at all. It's so incredibly light. Therefore, deep breathing, which people talk about as being necessary, is all right if you personally, normally, breathe that deeply. What you do in meditation is normal breathing. You take a couple of good deep breaths at the beginning to clear the air passages, if necessary, blow your nose, things like that, and then you just sit, breathing completely normally, as you personally would breathe. If we were all the same size, if we were all the same height, same length legs, same length back, all same eyesight, we could all have one formula that worked for everybody. But we're not all alike. Therefore, every person has to be looked at as an individual. And although Dogen wrote down the general rules for meditation, as I said, called the Fuken Zazengi, although he wrote them down, the fact remains that they have to be interpreted for each individual, no two being identically the same. A lot of people are very close, but they are not identical. And one of the problems when I was in the Far East, where there were some people who believed in a sort of regimentation during meditation, which frequently ended with people getting hurt. And one of the reasons I believe we've been successful in Shasta is because we've not allowed that. We have insisted that everyone is inspected and taken care of as an individual. So, when meditating, don't try to do something that is not natural to you in the way of breathing, putting your eyes, putting your legs, or putting your back. One general rule does apply. Crossing legs almost never works for meditation because it pulls one side of the body over more than another. There are a few general things like that. Everyone should sit to the very best of his ability. I'm sorry about that. We better leave it shut. Everyone should sit to the very best of his ability. That is a general rule. But one person's ability may be quite different from another's. You can have someone with a hunchback, for example, who could not in any way sit as most of you are sitting here. But he sits the best he knows how. That is all that the Buddha asks, for each of you to sit to the very best of your ability. And not to feel that you are any less of a Buddha because of it. Good heavens, how does this keep happening? Yeah. Why don't we fold it in half? That way it can't blow one way or t'other. Yeah. The last thing, we need the air, but we also can do with peace and quiet. Right. Remembering, then, to sit to the very best ability. Now, the hands. Some people do not have terribly long arms. Others have very long ones. You do not want the arms to be heavy. You are going to put one hand over the other with the thumbs touching very lightly. This is a way of checking, by the way, if you're extremely tense, because if you're pushing them hard like this, there is so much tension here that you can't meditate. So if they're touching lightly, you know there is no tension in your shoulders. That's the reason for doing it this way. Now, you want them to sit in your lap. If your arms are not long enough for them to sit in your lap comfortably, put a folded up jacket or something on your lap so that your hands can rest on it. Do not try to hold them up in the air, because that will create another form of tension. They have to rest naturally. People ask right over left, left over right. I was fortunate in that I learned meditation from Professor Fukaya, who was probably one of the greatest experts on meditation at that time in Japan. He was also the one who showed me the Taoist manuscript that I told you about and informed me in no uncertain terms that somebody who could speak the languages should take them and put them back to where they should be, which is one of the reasons I did it. Anyway, he made it very clear to me that you can do great harm with your body if you do not understand how to hold it at ease. And one of the things that is necessary for this is knowing which side of you is the most active. If you are very right-handed, you need to put the left hand over the right. If you are very left-handed, you need to put the right hand over the left. It eases the tensions that the one side that does most of the work has. So if people ask you, or say to you, you've got the wrong hand over, and you're left-handed, you can simply say, well, I'm a left-handed person. Or, why are you doing it the other way? I'm a right-handed person. All of these things have very simple bases, in fact, for practical reasons. They're not done for the look of the thing, or they better not be done for the look of the thing. One of the best ways to meditate is, of course, the old Egyptian one, in which you sat on a straight-backed chair with your back not touching the back of the chair, and a hand on each knee, the feet were together, and you were like this. And for Western people, this might not be a bad way to go. You could certainly do worse. And there's nothing wrong with doing it that way. I personally will always do it this way. But that's me. You have to find out for you which is the very best way for you. And if Soto Zen is worth its salt, it's not going to make an argument about that, because the purpose of meditation, as I have said, is for people to find the eternal. It is not to get a head count for an ism. I am not in this to see how many converts I can send in numbers, number-wise, to the head office. I am in it to try and help people to find the eternal, which is the purpose of meditation. And that's quite a different thing from insisting that everybody must do exactly alike. Now, obviously, if I get someone, and I say this because I got these two sitting here, if I get someone who is saying, well, I don't think this is good for me, and what I'm hearing is I'm going to do it my way, I don't care whether it's good for me or not, then the whole of the priests at Shastra are going to sit on that bod till he does it the way we tell him. Because self is not to get in the way of this. You know what I'm talking about. Yes, there's an old thing from the Benedictine rule in Catholicism where somebody sent us this plaque. And it shows two monks. Would you like to tell the story? You don't remember? Do you remember it? Tell them everything but the punchline. When you meet a brother who does not agree with the rule, remonstrate with him gently, even if it means to the front gate. And there is a picture of two monks holding a monk and carefully throwing him out. In other words, the purpose you come for is the main thing. It is not to exhibit self. And very occasionally we have had people in Shasta who have wanted to do things their way, and it really was dangerous for them, not only physically to do it their way, but dangerous for them from the point of view of self, because they were as little children who were saying, I'm going to do what I want. I'm not going to necessarily do what's good for me. Yeah, we did have someone ruin their legs by doing that. So understand, there has to be a sincere studying of oneself to do it right for oneself. And that we totally accept. And so does the whole of the church. It's worth its salt. Legs, feet, hands, head, eyes, right. Now, according to the Fukan Zazengi, the actual wording says, don't think and don't try not to think, just sit. This has been variably translated as think the unthinkable, which is the version I got, and don't try to think, don't try not to think, think emptiness, think nothingness, The problem with all of these things is that they give you something to think. It's the same story as the it I talked about this morning. Now you have, so guard well. If you think of emptiness, if you think of nothingness, you've got something to think about. So it won't, you can't do the meditation. Nothingness and emptiness and voidness, suchness, that was the one that really used to get to me. Think of suchness. And I used to get, I'm afraid my sense of humor got in the way, and I was Alice in Wonderland thinking of a picture of a muchness. What is a suchness, for God's sake? There is no such thing as a picture of a suchness. And having a somewhat literal mind, this didn't work too well. And in Japanese, there are two words. One means natural thought, and the other means deliberate thought. And the actual Japanese phrase says, no deliberate thought. Sit with no deliberate thought. Natural thought can occur, but sit with no deliberate thought. Now that makes a lot more sense, because since your eyes are open, you're going to see a bug crawling across the carpet. Since your ears are not closed, you are going to hear a car outside. Since your body is wearing clothes, you are going to feel things touch you. None of these things are going to disturb the meditation. This is natural thought. Because you are not dead, you are going to breathe. None of these things will disturb the meditation. But supposing there is a dog barking outside the window, and you are sitting there, and one person says, he's just, well, he doesn't say, he's sitting there meditating, and he thinks a dog is barking, and goes on sitting there. That's fine. But supposing you are sitting there, and you say in your mind, a dog is barking, and I wish it had shut up. Immediately your meditation's had it, because deliberate thought has entered into it, and the opposites have arisen. People don't realize it, but that's the opposite. The dog's barking and you wish it wouldn't. There are opposites there immediately. So you're just sitting there. Yes, it's hot. And you go on sitting. Yes, it's cold. And you go on sitting. Yes, a dog's barking. And you go on sitting. None of these things will interfere with the meditation. And in the end, you're very much like someone who's sitting on a riverbank underneath a freeway bridge, and all these cars are rushing back and forth and all the din, and you're just sitting there quietly by the riverbank. And it's nothing to do with you. You are doing your meditation. So understand the difference between natural thought and deliberate thought. Natural thought is quite harmless, and it's going to go on unless you kill yourselves. It's something you can't avoid. It's known as being alive. Which brings me to something else. Be very, very careful of people who teach you to stop all thought, because therein you can do serious harm to yourselves. Can do great harm to you mentally, and that you can do without. Do not try to control thinking in the sense of stopping thought, but control thinking in the sense of not chasing after thoughts. Now, if you have a mind that has to chase thoughts, and this is where breathing exercises come in, count the inhalations of the breath or the exhalations. That will stop your mind chasing after some specific thing. In many ways, thoughts are like young children when one is meditating. I've often had parents say, is it all right if I meditate with my two-year-old? And the answer is yes. An excellent idea. And what first happens is that the two-year-old wonders why mummy or daddy is sitting down looking at a wall. And then they try to distract mummy or daddy. And in the end, when they find that the distraction doesn't work, they sit down and look at the wall too. I've even had a dog do that and a cat. Well, if she's getting something out of this wall, we might as well look at the wall too. You see, there is a positive use to greed. I mean that seriously. But thoughts are very like the child. They will try to distract you from what you are trying to do. You have to treat them the same way and pay no attention to them. But that they come up and they depart, that happens. It's going to happen. As long as you live. It will only be a problem if, as I said, when the dog is barking, you're mad because the dog's barking. Or it's annoying. Or you wish it wouldn't. Then it's deliberate thought. So, see if I've missed anything. This is the rules for meditation, which I've been going through at some length. Now, Dogen starts off with a short treatise on why our training and enlightenment differentiated, since the truth is universal, and why study the means to attaining it, since the supreme teaching is free. Since truth is not separate from training, training is unnecessary. However, the separation would be as that between heaven and earth, if even the slightest gap exists. For when the opposites arise, the Buddha mind is lost. This is because a lot of people think that meditation is one thing and having to do work is another. Training, which is our everyday life, a meditation, which is when we are sitting still to be one with the eternal, cannot be separated from each other, which is why the precepts which teach us how to live our everyday life whilst we are meditating are so very important. You see, training and meditation can be turned into a pair of opposites. Oh, I do wish I didn't have to go to work today. I want to meditate the whole day. You can turn the work into a day's worth of meditation by just doing the work. Thus it is said, when you are sweeping, just sweep. When you are meditating, just meditate. When you are picking grapes or hitting a typewriter, just pick grapes or hit a typewriter. Don't try to think that one thing is far superior to another. There are three ways, it is said, of getting to the eternal: by works, by meditation, and by study. I have never yet met anyone who didn't have to combine all three. Perhaps there is a prevalence in all of us for one of them to be more in the ascendancy than another. But you have to have all three. And you cannot despise any one of those three as lower than the other two or one. So remember, you need to know what is moving meditation, and know that when you are washing the sick flesh of the monk Tisa, that it is as much the work of the Buddha as when you are sitting beside the demon and teaching him that the killing of anger is the one killing that is permitted to a monk. You have to know that when you are cooking the meal in the kitchen and somebody else is celebrant in the hondo, that what he is doing is just as good as what you are doing. And not think that one is superior to the other. For when the opposites arise, the Buddha mind is lost. Ambition creeps in, desire creeps in, envy creeps in. You cannot have this happen. And although they are differentiated, although all is different, all is also one. And although all is one, all is also different. And there is no difference between them. And again, you've got the same thing here. We all look different, but we're all part of the same Buddha nature. All the lights are at different angles and different strengths, but they're all part of the same electricity. And training, whether it is in doing the job you are doing to the very best of your ability or sitting to the very best of your ability in the hondo, these things are all the same. And pure zazen must be done. No matter what you do, pure zazen must be done. If you think there is a difference in doing a job magnificently and in doing the job magnificently without thought of whether it is magnificent, if you think there is a difference in sitting in meditation for you who can sit well or someone who cannot sit so well, you've got opposites coming up and coming out your ears. You cannot judge what another person is doing in his work. You must not judge what another person is doing in his work. This is why studying the precepts is so absolutely essential. And for the Buddhist young, it is regarded as, well, you can't be a Buddhist adult unless you have studied those precepts. The Buddha mind is lost when the opposites arise. Therefore, the koans have to be understood. And the seeing of how the Buddha mind comes into being has to be understood. And the bringing of the Buddha mind into being has to be the aim. And the Buddha mind is being one with the eternal, being one with the undying, the unborn, the unchanging, and the uncreated. For in so doing, there are no opposites. Absolutely no opposites. However much you may be proud of your understanding, says Dogen, however much you may be enlightened, whatever your attainment of wisdom and supernatural power, your finding of the way to mind illumination, your power to touch heaven and to enter into enlightenment. When the opposites arise, you have almost lost the way to salvation. Every day in Shasta, this is recited in midday. Watch out for the opposites. Watch out for the judgmentalism. Watch out for, well, I can get away with this, or I can get away with that, or I don't think so-and-so is doing as good as he should be. Meaning, you're doing better than he is? Watch out for the pride. When the opposites arise, you have almost lost the way to salvation. Although the Buddha had great wisdom at birth, he sat in training for 6 years. Although Bodhidharma transmitted the Buddha mind, we still hear the echoes of his 9 years facing a wall. The ancestors were very diligent, and there is no reason why we people of the present day cannot understand. All you have to do is cease from erudition and your own opinions, withdraw within, and reflect upon yourself. Should you be able to cast off body and mind naturally in this way, that is, not worrying about if you hurt, or not worrying about if you're hot or cold, or not worrying about noises, just sitting there to meditate, which is why it's so important to find the right way for you as an individual to sit. The Buddha mind will immediately manifest itself. If you want to find it quickly, you must start at once, and you must do it to the best of your ability as you personally can do it, and not as any specific group maintains. Now, I've got a quarter of an hour. Okay. Sorry, I do have to keep an eye on the clock. This type of zazen is not something that is done in stages. It is simply the lawful gateway to carefree. And I don't mean that in the word carefree, I've never liked in this context, but it means to having peace without having to care about life and death, without having to worry in such a way that you can harm yourself. Carefree is not a good word, but I don't know what else to use. To train and enlighten ourselves is to become thoroughly wise. The koan appears naturally in daily life. Remember the story I told of the monk who carried the one over the puddle? The koan appears quite naturally. Every day something happens, and we have to work out how we can deal with it according to the precepts and to the finest understanding we can have of those precepts. Thus, the koan does appear naturally in daily life. Now, the reason Dogen mentions this here is because at the time there was a priest, a very famous one called Daiye Soh, uttering koans to themselves. This was a new idea that had just recently come about, and Dogen was very much against it. Daiye Soko had walked out of Soto Zen saying that it was just too difficult for the average man, and you needed to take your koan and sort on it in your meditation. And this is one of the beginnings of having koans in meditation. But as Dogen quite rightfully points out, the koan comes up naturally anyway. What you need to sort out is how to live by the precepts so that as and when the koan comes up, you know what to do. It's all very well sitting looking at a wall, thinking over somebody else's problems. You've got your own personal set. And these problems show how great monks dealt with similar problems. The koan arises naturally in daily life. You do not have to sit there and sort on that. What you have to do is sit there to find the eternal and to know that it exists. And in doing that, and in trying to keep the precepts at the very deepest level, when the koan arises naturally in daily life, you'll be able to handle it. There is a large treatise by Dogen on what he thinks of Daiye Soko, which, since his language was not always all it could have been, I have neither translated nor used. You should understand, however, that when he calls a monk a useless rice bag, those weren't quite the words he was using. And I leave you to think of what they probably were. If you become thus utterly free of the selfish self, you will be as the water wherein the dragon dwells, the dragon being the eternal. Or as the mountain whereon the tiger being the eternal, roams. Understand clearly that the truth appears naturally, and then your mind will be free from doubts and vacillation. And in studying the precepts thus, you will know how to handle the koan that appears in everyday life. If you see someone carrying a girl over a pond, you will not immediately wonder, is he enjoying it? You will merely see someone carrying a girl over a pond. The argument can come up, well, what do things like, what is the sound of one hand clapping mean? I mean, this has got nothing to do with ponds and precepts. It has everything to do with precepts. If someone asks you a conundrum which you can't answer, it is to teach you that you have so much pride that you are sitting there thinking you can answer that which is obviously unanswerable. And therefore you are going to have to abandon your pride and yell, help! There is no explanation to this. And when you yell help with your whole heart and soul and mind, you can find the eternal very fast. So all of these things were for helping people who had different koanic, I suppose would be the adjective, problems. Keep this in mind. Right. Where did I get to? When you wish to arise from zazen, sway the body gently from side to side and arise quietly. The body must make no violent movements. This is very important. I myself have seen that the ability to die while sitting and standing, which transcends both peasant and sage, is obtained through the power of zazen. It is no more possible to understand natural activity with the judgmental mind than it is possible to understand the signs of enlightenment. We've been stuck with the word enlightenment, and too many people have thought that it was something they could get rather than the realization of something they'd already got but didn't know about, which is, of course, the realization of their oneness with the eternal. and the realization of everything else, else's oneness with the eternal. Do not think that enlightenment is something outside of yourselves. It is something that is already there and always has been. This is very important. Nor is it possible to understand training and enlightenment by supernatural means. You have the means now. You do not have to gain supernatural powers to understand it. Such understanding is outside the realm of speech and vision. Such truth is beyond personal opinions. When you have it, you will know you always had it, that it was merely you who had clouds in the way. The clouds of your own opinions and the clouds of your own theories. Do not discuss the wise and the ignorant. Do not defame others and puff yourself up. There is only one thing to train hard, for this is true enlightenment. To train yourself to keep the precepts absolutely and to see no difference between the meditation in the meditation hall and the work of the day. But never think that one is not necessary. There are people who say, well, if that's so, then all I have to do is my nursing. No, you have to give some of your time to finding the eternal in meditation. And you have to give some of your time expressing your knowledge of the eternal in the nursing. You cannot get away with only one of them. You have to have both. Training and enlightenment are naturally undefiled. To live by meditation is the same as to live an ordinary daily life. The Buddha seal has been preserved by both the Buddhas in the present world and by those of the world of the Indian and Chinese ancestors. They are thus always spreading true Zen. In the present world and by those of the world of the Indian and Chinese ancestors. They are thus always spreading true Zen. The life of the Buddha has never been cut off. The life of the great ancestors still exists, and you are partaking in it right now. And this is the same as the Ryozan meeting of the Buddha and the Buddhas of the ancients. For your life is the same as theirs, and you must understand this as a result of meditation and doing your work according to the way in which the Buddhas and ancestors did theirs. All activity, therefore, is permeated with pure Zazen. The means of training are thousandfold. Everyone has different jobs. But pure Zazen must still be done. The sitting down and doing of Zazen must still be done. To be certain that you keep yourself on the right road. And to recognize that there is that which is far greater than you, the unborn, the undying, in which you share. It is futile to travel to other dusty countries, thus forsaking your own seat, believing that you can find it in other places. Here you can't possibly do it. Although I must admit I've known better places than right beside it. But that's neither here nor there.